Deadly Grounds Coffee knows how important your coffee is to you. Every batch is roasted to perfection with a unique special method that brings out the richest, deepest, smoothest flavor you'll ever find. We're coffee freaks too, and deadly serious about our brew. Just one sip and you'll know why we say, once you go deadly, you don't go back. It's truly coffee to die for. So when you're ready to get a little deadly, get online and order yours at getdeadly.com. It's coffee so good, it's scary.
Greetings and welcome once again to another episode of the Retro Reductopus Cephala Podcast, the only show that celebrates all the things that made growing up awesome. We are part of the Dorkening and Inebriard Podcast Networks, and as always, we are brought to you tonight by Deadly Grounds Coffee, coffee to die for. I am your host, my name's Parasite Steve, and I am cohortless tonight, but that's okay because that's generally how it goes right down here in the brig. And this week, down in that lovely dank and darkness that you love so dearly, we have a very special guest for you. We have a lady who likes throwing horns, I gotta tell you guys, almost as much as I do, and that is really saying something. She's a talented writer and editor of all types of horror, the author of numerous published short stories, and her recently released debut novel, Chisel the Bone. And as if that wasn't cool enough, she's also the rhythm guitarist and lead singer for the heavy metal band Scars Aligned. Please, folks out there in listening land, put your tentacles together for Renee S. DeCamillis. How's it going, Renee?
Hey, Steve.
I probably said your last name wrong, actually. Is it just DeCamillis?
DeCamillis.
DeCamillis. So I did say the D. I'm like, yes. If it's a DeCamillis, I'm screwed. I'm not going to lead with that. I meant to ask before, but.
Nothing fancy.
DeCamillis. Like yes. Decommission. Like we're about to decommission your house or something. I don't know if houses get decommissioned. Anyway, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming
on. Thanks for having me. It's great.
Well, hopefully it'll be great. Like, you're just assuming. You're putting a lot of faith in me. We know each other a little bit.
It might suck. I don't know.
It's probably not going to, but it could. I mean, it could suck. So you're actually from Maine originally, right?
Yep, I'm a
Maina. So you're a good friend with a previous guest of ours, Morgan Sylvia. She was in the brig last year.
Yeah. I know Morgan. Yeah, pretty cool chick.
She's really cool, and she's also into metal. So I don't know. It's something there. I don't know. Maybe we need to do a book together of, like,
you
know,
that would be awesome.
I mean, why not? You know, headbanging horror or something. I don't know. Just throwing it out there. You know, some with horns, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, gotta have the horns.
I mean, I always do. I gotta have the horns. You can't separate me intrinsically from them. So since we're talking about the horns and heavy metal and stuff, you are a musician, as I mentioned. Is it okay if we start with the music and then kind of work into the book stuff?
Start wherever you want. Yeah. Cool. Sounds good to me.
So obviously hard rock and heavy metal. I mean, like, I don't actually even know, like, what bands you're into, but it's like, you know, when you sense that, like, you're in that genre, you know, somebody else is a fan, like, it's just enough and it's always fun. But we've never really gotten to talk about it, but I know your band Scars Aligned, really cool name. Also, I think it's interesting that, like, scars are like a motif in your book, your new book too. I was like, oh, you know, like scars there. I think that was probably intentional. Is that intentional?
I wasn't really intentional with the band name, but I think it's, I don't know. I got a lot of scars. So it ends up in a lot of things I create.
Well, fair enough.
Bad wounds.
So I get the sense, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the sense that you've been in bands before. Like, this is not your first rodeo, right?
Yeah, no, it's not my first. No, but this is my first all original where I'm singing and playing guitar. So that's cool.
Oh, cool. So what have you done previously?
The last band I was in was all original, but I was just the singer. I didn't play guitar at all. And I only wrote the lyrics. So, you know, the rest of the guys would write the tunes, you know, the music, and then I'd put the lyrics to it. And before that, it was all cover bands.
So with this, with Scars Aligned, you're more involved in the writing process and stuff. So do you tend to, in certain songs, do you lead with a riff or something, and you're like, hey, I came up with this. Let's see what everybody else can come up with around it.
Yeah,
that's how we always wrote.
Yeah, it's really, yeah, whoever comes up with a riff idea, or sometimes lyrics come to me first. I might just start hearing, you know, melody line with lyrics to it, and then try to, you know, write to that. But it kind of goes either way. Whoever brings the ideas forward, we just like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Let's, what do you, anybody got any ideas to throw to it, you know?
Right. So. Very cool. So, your current style of singing, and I think I'm right on this. I could be wrong. You do the death growls, right? That's your thing.
I'm not death metal.
Okay,
but I do growl. Like the last band I was in, that's like when we were doing shows around the state. That's what I was known as, the growler.
So you guys were like, you know, I don't know, Baby Arch Enemy or something.
Well, and I wish I could do that. I mean, I don't know. Her monster comes out, man. I don't know. I kind of mix it up a little bit. It's not all, you know, it's nothing like death metal. I don't know how to describe it. It's because I kind of pull from, I like so much different music, like not just metal, that I pull from a lot of different places. So I don't really try to sing like anybody else or play like anyone else. I just kind of mush all my influences together, and it comes out however it comes out, however I feel it.
Gotcha.
But yeah. I don't know what you'd describe me as, you know. I do know that people have said they can't believe that that big voice comes out of little me. I get loud.
Are you familiar with the band? They're like a Canadian, I think they're like progressive death metal, Into Eternity. Do you know them?
No, I don't.
The singer of that band is, his name's Stu Block, and he sung for Ice to Earth for a couple of albums too. And he's like one of those ones that I was my friends brought him to my attention. I didn't discover anything, but like, man, he can do both. Man, this guy, like, you know, his clean vocals are great, and he can do like Halford type stuff.
Yeah.
And he can go really, really, really high, you know, King Diamond Halford. And then he can just, you know, belt out the screamo. And it's like so extra impressive, I think, when you can do both. Because for me, my style, if I ever tried to do the death metal stuff, I could like probably get, you know, a song out, but then my voice is destroyed.
And then, yeah, you throw your voice out.
I mean, utterly, like for the night, gone, done, goodbye.
Yeah.
So I always think it's incredible when somebody can do both. I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, as far as who do you sound like? You sound like you.
Right. I sound like me, but like a female, metal singer that I really friggin' love, and I wish I could sing like her, is, Maria Brink of In This Moment.
Oh, In This Moment. Okay.
And she can do those dynamics. She can bring that really, rah, but she can sing beautifully as well and hit those crisp high notes, you know?
Yeah.
And, but most of my, most of the singers that I really like are male vocalists. Like my three favorite singers are Chris Cornell.
Okay.
Maynard James Keenan, and, oh, Jesus, why am I drawing a blank on his name? Faith No More.
Oh, Mike Patton.
Mike Patton, yeah. Those are my three favorite male vocalists. But for female, I like Maria Brink. Kind of mush it all together. But I also love, and it's not really metal, is Clutch. I really love Clutch.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, I was more of the, like, I mean, I love, like, high-pitched singers, like I'm saying, Rob Halford and such, but I tend to like the lower end of clean. So like the Ronnie James Dio, or like, I don't know if you know, do you know Symphony X? Do you know that band?
I know the name, but I can't hear their music.
They're so good. The singer of that band is Russell Allen, and he has worked with everybody, including like TSO. He sometimes tours with Trans-Siberian Orchestra, but like, I mean, he's a giant of a man. First of all, he's huge, and his voice is even huger. And it's like the size of the sky, this guy. He actually kind of sounds like Dio in a way, too. He almost sounds like he's of that school. But Russell Allen is just one of my absolute favorites. I would check them out.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, it is that Prague side. And it's funny, I mentioned Prague twice. I'm not that into Prague metal. But yeah, there's a few bands for sure. But that's very cool. Sweet. As far as inspirations and stuff, where you take your inspiration. So are you finding you like being part of the writing as well as, you know, the writing of the music as well as the writing of the vocals and stuff?
Yes, I think so far this is my favorite band. We haven't even had a show yet, but this is my favorite band because I'm doing so much more writing, you know, and I'm not just I'll tell you. Being a chick in a metal band, it's not always easy to get in a band because a lot of metal dudes don't want a chick in their band, at least in my experience. So all the guys in my band are really cool. And I was a little hesitant in, you know, doing all the writing and bringing, you know, guitar riff ideas to the band because I didn't know what they'd think, you know, because I just didn't because I'm a chick. But to see him get so excited, like, oh, this is fucking awesome. Oh, yeah, I got an idea. And, like, you know, and then have him be like, oh, this was my favorite song that we've got so far. And I'm like,
nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sweet. All right. See, guys need more chicks in their fucking metal bands.
Well, it's funny, you know, I mean, first of all, awesome is awesome either way. I mean, if it's not the like look you're going for, I don't know what to say to you, but like I do feel like girls in metal bands sort of started to be in vogue. I mean, like, you know, I think that it was pretty rare, even in the like late 90s. And then I sort of noticed some gothic bands doing it, gothic metal, like Nightwish or something with a bridge. I don't know. And like Leaves Eyes and like, you know, there were these like gothic bands that were doing it. And then it sort of started to bleed over into other types of metal. And now we have like, you know, I mean, Release the Archers and it's like a witches band, Burning Witches or something like that. I don't know. There's seemingly a decent amount. And obviously, you know, even though she's, you know, her bands aren't metal, like, you know, Lizzie Hale has like one of the best metal voices, period. Like, I wish she would like also have a metal band that was true metal because she's so great.
Yeah.
And then of course we got the death metal side of things, you know, or her name's Allison, right? Who's in Arch Enemy?
Yes, Allison.
Yeah, she sort of came in because she was not the original singer of that band, and the original singer was a dude. So I think just one album. And I liked that album. And going back now, it's like, oh my God, this is a different band. Like you can't
even, yeah,
they just did that one band. That one album. And it's like, holy crap, this is not Arch Enemy. What is this? You think like this is a different band with the same name or something.
Yeah. And, she's amazing.
Yeah. And so I think it's really cool. I think that today, I mean, feel free to, you know, tell me I'm wrong, but I think today versus like 20 years ago, it's almost like celebrated and cool, and like you almost want, you know, just to be part of that trend, you like want to have
I wish it was more like it is now, back in the 90s. Well, you know, when I was getting started, and but you know, it is what it is. So
yeah, I mean,
I'm
for
still
sure
here, it didn't scare me away.
So the band I was trying to the witch band is Burning Witches, and they are really great. They're like traditional like 80s sort of heavy metal, like just trad metal. They're really cool though. Anyway, but that's an all-girl band, even so, go them.
I always think it's kind of a cool idea to have like if it's a four-piece, to have two dudes and two chicks, because then it's kind of a well-balanced, you know, yeah, I kind of look at it as kind of well-balanced energy, you know, but.
Yeah, I mean,
but I don't know. I'm a Fleetwood I'm a Mac, chick that, like,
you know.
What's that?
It's Fleetwood Mac.
Like, right, yeah. But I'm also a chick that's comfortable hanging with dudes, so it's cool.
And calling yourself a chick. That's your preferred.
Yeah, I tend to call everybody, all girls I call chicks. I don't know, I just have it. But I tend to call everybody guys, so hey, don't get offended. I just say hey guys. Hey, dude. Yeah.
I tend to say man, even if it's a girl sometimes, and I don't.
Yeah, I do that too. Oh, yeah, like, hey, I say man. To my best friend, like, hey man. Yeah. It doesn't mean anything. It's just a saying.
Right. But anyway, so that's really cool. I'm definitely looking forward to hearing this band. And I know you guys are in the studio trying to pump some tunes out. And
oh my gosh, yes, we're trying. Dying to get some tunes out.
Yeah. Yeah, you were saying you had some problems recording. I mean, you know, technical problems are just like, you know, you wouldn't be a band if you didn't have those.
Oh my gosh. Well, the funny thing is, okay, so 2 days, we had a water issue with the snowstorm in our basement. And the water had just crept into the band room. And then when I went to practice, after dealing with all that cleanup, then a couple of my pedals weren't coming on. And I'm like, oh, shit, we're going to the studio on Saturday. I don't have money to get new fucking pedals. But then the cables were just all switched around for moving the gear. And I just didn't notice. I was all like freaking out. And then the night before, so that got all straightened out. And then the night before, the bass player, who's my husband, after we shut our gear down after practice, his power switch fucking went on his head. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then we get to the studio. Yeah, we get to the studio and we're all psyched. And our drummer's like, oh, yeah, you should see his kid. I don't even have to load in. We'll have extra time to record. I don't have to load all my shit in. And then, oh, yeah, we're set up. We're ready to go. And then the producer's like, I'm not getting a signal. And we're like, what? He's like, I'm not getting a signal. His friggin' interface fried, I'm telling you. And I looked right at him. I go, I'm standing too close. And he's like, what? Seriously, for some reason, when I stand too close to computers, other people's computers, shit goes wrong all the time. I had a friend who used to yell at me all the time. She's like, get the fuck away from my computer so I can pull this up and show it to you.
Maybe you're
I'd have to leave the room.
Late.
And I did that in the studio
or something.
I went around the corner so he could figure it all out, and then he finally figured out what to do and got things back up and running. I'm like, see, I just had to leave the room to get it working again.
You know, that probably happens to Magneto all the time, and I've never thought of that until this moment. I've never thought of that. Like, Magneto is probably such a pain in the ass to have around if you have, like, you know, stereo equipment and, like, TVs and shit.
Well,
imagine, like, he just come over. You didn't even turn the TV on. He just came over. And you go to watch TV later, and it's got, like, green spots, you know, if you had a tube TV. And you're like, God damn, Magneto. From now on, I'm only going to his house.
I wish I had all his powers.
All right. So we'll definitely look forward to that. Get, you know, feel free to, you know, share a tune in the group by far when that comes
out. Oh, I definitely will. We're going back in on the 11th.
Awesome.
So,
very cool. Very cool. Take two. So good luck with that. So, you know, we'll transition into your writing, and you know, there is really something about heavy metal and horror. I mean, the two just seem cut from the same cloth. You know, mm-hmm. they really go together so well. And I celebrate the two because they're my two big interests too, obviously. Mm. So obviously it's subjective, but man, it just, there are themes that you could have, you know, there are so many great songs that are based on, like Maiden used to always do this, you know, there's so many songs that are based on shows or movies or something that they love. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Number of the Beast is just based on The Omen 2.
I know, like, so many metal bands do that, you know?
I love that.
Or they just make up their own horror story.
Right.
You know, King Diamond, you know?
Oh, they make Abigail up their Allen.
Own, you know? Oh, no.
Was he? Yeah, he's Abigail, right? That was the
Abigail.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that movie's coming out, and that had me questioning.
Yes, yeah, I saw that.
It's like, is this a King Diamond movie? Are you shitting me right now?
I thought of that too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's you know, so many great you know, concept albums and whatever that could just be, you know, horror movies or mm-hmm. at the very least thrillers.
But yeah, I mean, it's just the everything that works in one works in the other. So,
oh yeah.
So your new one, is up for pre-order. This is your debut novel. You've written a lot of stuff before. You have a lot of short stories that are published in various books, various anthologies. You released a novella last year, right?
Yeah, it originally came out in 2019, but it's been re-released with my new publisher.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
Since it's my novel's the sequel.
Okay, so I wasn't 100% sure. So that was one of the questions. So the novel, we'll definitely get to the novella too. But the novel, let's start with that. Chisel the Bone, great name.
Thank you.
It'll be released. Yes, you're welcome. Very, very cool title. Very, very eye-catching cover. I love the monster. I'm a sucker for monsters.
Thanks.
I don't know what that thing is, but I'm hoping it's a take on vampires, and I just love it. So it'll be released by Encyclopocalypse. Encyclopocalypse Publications.
Say that three times fast.
I'm just trying to say it once, Renee. I'm failing. Encyclopocalypse Publications and they had to have a P word after it. Encyclopocalypse
Publications. Yeah, exactly.
On July 23rd of this year, it's coming out, but you can pre-order it right now in various places, including Amazon. And the synopsis, I usually like to read a little bit of the synopsis on the back of the book for you guys, and I will do that now. It says, Dory, a mental patient out on safety release, finds herself as the single witness who can bring down a horrifying cult of drug addicts from her past, as well as their supernatural puppeteer. Now Dory finds herself on the run from the cult, who wants to chisel her own bones into dust to satiate their addictions and keep her from bringing their secrets to light. Now, you were kind enough to send me an advanced copy of this one, and I gotta say, I've read the beginning of it, the first few chapters. I think I'm three chapters in plus the prologue, and I've really been enjoying it. It's really like one of those ones that just starts with a bang. Like you seriously waste no time getting to the good stuff.
Why delay?
Is that something you like in general? Is that, you know, other stories of yours do that? Cause I always try to do that. I love that.
Oh, well, the first book didn't do that. So I just thought it would be cool to just come out of the gate a little differently.
Nice. Yeah. So it's a bit of a course correction then.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, I like the way I start the first book, but it's just, it's different now. It's, you know.
Both good, just different.
Yes.
So, I mean, you have this prologue and I really like it. Actually, you have this prologue that is just so, you know, dark and gory and gruesome. And then you go to like a one-page letter. And that was really giving me like Frankenstein or Dracula vibes sort of thing, where, you know, there's letters thrown in. I hope there's more. I don't know if there are, but I do love that as a device for a novel, you know, to just.
Yes, there are a few more.
Very cool. So you already said, so this is actually a direct sequel of the novella, which is called The Bone Cutters. That was the novella. Yes. So that was okay.
The Bone is written as a standalone.
Okay.
So
same main character, right?
Yep.
We have Dory.
Yeah, and it picks up just a week later from book one.
Very cool. Very cool. So if you read it, because the novella is like, I think it's under 100 pages.
Around 100.
So that would be easy to just sort of read them both back to back, and you know, you get a singular experience if they're that. Timeline is that close together, right?
Yeah, actually the publisher is going to release a special edition hardcover that has both of them in the same book.
I love that idea. That's a wicked cool idea. Very
yeah
cool.
I like that idea too. Wasn't mine. I can't take credit for it.
But don't let that stop you from ordering this version, because this version is the one that's going to be worth big bucks later. Okay, this is the one. So as I was reading, I got this feeling immediately, like, you know, a paragraph in, of like this strong world building that you're doing. which is not something that you always see in horror. But it was almost giving me vibes of like urban fantasy or something. It's like almost like you were writing a proper horror book, but you're treating it in the way that a urban fantasy writer would treat their world. Like you're coming up with like your bad guys, which I still don't know that much about really, but they clearly have a lot of rules and they clearly have a lot of thought put into why they're doing what they're doing, what they can and cannot do, and what they need and what they, you know, just the overall workings of the bad guys and, you know, your monsters, you know, or whatever, as well as the rest of the world. I'm sure there's things there too, but that was sort of the sense that I got just from the beginning. Do you think that's fair to say that, yeah, you know, you really were concerned with the world building of it?
I didn't really look at it as world building, but yeah, it actually kind of is, I guess. Yeah. And yeah, that was, I enjoyed doing that.
Yeah. Is that something
I love creating bad guys.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, I love monsters, like I said, and, you know, I love original monsters. So, you know, if this is a take on vampires or some other thing that we've seen before, I can already tell you guys that it's incredibly unique. It's totally, totally different. I love that, you know, I mean, that's always what I try to do too. Same exact thing. You know, if I am going to write about something that is familiar, and you get people and you get that hook, you're like, oh, but it's this. And they're like, cool. It's like, but yeah, but it's in a way you haven't seen it before.
Right.
You know, because that's what I like as a fan too. Like if I, you know, go to watch a werewolf movie or something, it's like, all right, well, at this point, there's so many werewolf movies. Most of them suck. Yes. Like, what is this bringing to the table?
Exactly. Yeah. And I was thinking that with my bone cutters, the villains, they are vampiric. They're not vampires. I mean, yeah, I'll give it away right now, but they are their ways are very vampire-esque.
Fair enough. So that's kind of like that sort of the way you're talking about it sort of makes me think of the bad guys in Dr. Sleep, the True Knot.
Right.
You remember those? Those were very original.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, they're vampiric. They're not vampires like you would think.
Right, yeah. They're their own thing, yeah, but, you know?
Yeah, and I loved that. I mean, I think the True Knot was... I mean, I love Dr. Sleep, and I thought they were an incredible creation for kids.
Oh, yeah, I thought so, life, too.
Especially. Mm-hmm. And the first book had nothing to do with anything like that.
You know, I know.
It was very, very cool. Anyway. Just sidebar there. back to Chisel. That's really awesome that you had so much fun and you're like, you know, did you have a lot of that planned out from the novella, or are these characters unique to this book?
No, that came from the novella. They were first introduced in the novella when Dory was in the psych hospital. The first book completely takes place in the psychiatric hospital. And and my main character, Dory, wakes up in the padded room and can't remember why she's there. And finds out she's been involuntarily committed. And it's there, in when she gets sent to the wrong counseling group, that she meets these characters. And they're the same. A lot of the same characters from book one are in book two.
Nice.
But new ones are introduced too, of course, but.
Right. But no, that's very cool. I think I read, you had some great reviews certainly for the novella. And I think one of them described it as like a Girl Interrupted sort of a story.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Cause through book one, you don't know what's really going on. Because my main character is mentally ill. And in book one, she's constantly being stuffed full of psychotropics, you know, she's at a psych hospital. And so you don't really know what's real and what's not real.
She's like the ultimate unreliable narrator.
Yes. I love unreliable narrators.
Oh yeah.
I'll never forget. I took a workshop in grad school and I was workshopping a story that was an unreliable narrator. And then at the end of my workshop day, when it was ending, the professor was like, you know, nobody likes unreliable narrators. I'm like, yeah, well, they'll like mine. So
you're you. Like, challenge accepted.
Exactly. I like a challenge, baby.
So you've been writing for some time. You've been writing, you went to grad school. So yeah, what, you know, I want to keep talking a little bit about the book, but
yeah, go ahead. Sorry. I get off on tangents.
Let's pivot. I want to know, I'm all about the organic conversation anyway. Like, so yeah. Like, how long have you been writing? How long have you been, you know, just known that this was something you wanted to do?
Well, I've always liked writing since I was a kid. But my story sucked as a kid. I mostly wrote song lyrics and poetry when I was a kid. But I don't know. I actually didn't start taking my writing more seriously until I was in my early 30s. Even though I always liked, you know, reading and writing stories. And I just never thought, I don't know, like, I was a musician too. And that's I just thought that's all I wanted to do. But then, you know, my life pivoted because I, you know, chose going to the most expensive school, music school in the country, and couldn't afford to finish. So I ended up getting a psych degree and stupidly worked in the psychiatric field. And that really wore me down. And I'm like, well, it was, actually I was, an ed tech in a high school class for, I don't know what you'd call it, a special ed, but for kids with behavioral issues and mental health issues. And it was being a teacher assistant for a literature class. And, you know, we're reading all the stuff that made me fall in love with writing back when I was in school, you know, and here I am teaching that. And I'm like, why am I doing what I'm doing when I just want to fucking write, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just like, all right, I fucking quit. I'm going back to school. And
nice, badass. And
then my life changed for the better.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah. That was in about, I think it was about 2000 and like seven when the desire to write was rekindled. Yeah.
So you've been back in it for a little while. So that's pretty cool. And, I mean, yeah, you have like I said, a lot of short stories out in the world, that have been published. And I mean, just last year you put out a bunch.
I got another one coming out soon.
Nice.
Yeah. My first sci-fi story.
Oh, cool.
Yes. Rex and Roxy's Roadside Cafe and Glass Emporium. That's a mouthful. Oh. Hell yeah.
What was the book that you were in that was like, it was like haunted sea stories?
Oh yeah, horrors of the sea, startling sea story. Horrors of the deep, sorry, horrors of the deep.
Okay,
startling sea that story.
Right. Yeah. Oh, what a cover on that one!
I gotta pick that one up. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember you posted that, and I was so jealous. I'm like, whenever, especially when it's a theme I'm into, and like if it's a cover that I'm like beyond in love with, I'm like, oh, I'm secretly so seething.
I know. I feel like that too. We're not supposed to judge books by their cover, but when they have a kick-ass cover,
it's awesome.
Interested. Interested.
I'm a judging. That's all. Yeah, I can say.
Yeah, me too. I won't lie.
So you mentioned, so you were in this, you know, you have a psychology degree. Cause I was wondering, you know, there are strong themes of mental health that you deal with in clearly both of these books. Yes. One reviewer definitely described The Bone Cutters as One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, if written by Clive Barker, which is just a hell of an awesome thing to get written about you.
Yeah, you don't want to end up in my psychiatric hospital.
Just saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was going to ask if the subject of mental health and addiction is something that's important to you personally because of past experience, or, you know, or it's just something you're interested in. But you have this the psychology background I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, it's both. It's I've dealt with a lot of crazy people in my life. I've dealt with a lot of addicts in my life. And I studied psychology because, I mean, I kind of wanted to go. I had considered going on to grad school for neurology because the brain just fascinates me. And like one mental illness in particular that I'm absolutely fascinated by is schizophrenia. So I've studied that a lot. I've written about that a lot. Actually, my first book deals with schizophrenia and psychics kind of go against each other kind of. But yeah, mental illness and addiction has been big in my life. So not wanting it in my life, but also it's an interest of mine. I think because I've dealt with so much of it, I try to figure people out because people are fucking crazy, man. So I just try to figure them out, but man, it just drives me crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, that's what'll happen. You drive yourself crazy trying to justify others.
Yeah.
But
what do they say about staring into the abyss?
Take too long, it stares back. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I you know, it's funny. I feel like I keep saying this in this interview, but like you keep reminding me of me, and like it's freaking. I'm the same way. I love. I've always thought of myself as like an armchair, you know, psychoanalyst or something. Like, because usually when people, you know, are annoying or you know are assholes or whatever, and somebody's pissed about it, I have like a way of being able to be like, well, this is what's going on. This is what they're thinking and this is what they do. And this is how they react every time. And this is why it's driving you crazy. And they're like, oh my God. And you know, and it's just like very, very interesting to me. The whole, basically everything you just said, like, I'm also interested by like why we do the things we do, why we say the things we do, and toxic people, especially are, you know, it's like, well, they're not. Yeah. Toxic. Why? What's the mechanism of their own unique toxicity? Like what are their patterns that they do and why do they do them? Why are they doing that? Why do they constantly keep doing the same crap? And, there are definitely people that, I have sort of identified, like just even to myself, even if I never told anybody about it, I'm like, this is what I can't stand about this person. This is what they always do. And that person becomes like the name of it in my brain. I'm like, oh, that's a Gerald or whatever. And then later in life, I'm like, oh my God, this guy's a Gerald. This guy's a Gerald. That's a Gerald again. You know, there's another Gerald. And you sort of start seeing these patterns and it's like, yeah, it's unique to that person, but not really. And
that's too funny because I have a sister like that. So whenever my husband and I are like, we're seeing some fucking crazy going on, we're like, oh, my husband would be like, oh my God, that's just like Satan's sister. Because she doesn't have a name anymore. She's just Satan.
But I mean, it's, if you're going to rename yourself, you know, name it after somebody famous, I always say. She could have gone with like Madonna or Frankenstein, but Satan's good.
Yeah.
Satan's pretty good. Nobody wants to be John Voight.
No.
Not anymore. That's really cool. And I think that, you know, I think writers in general always, you know, we always put our life experiences and our, you know, our interests into whatever we write. And I think that's, you know, how you get really great authentic writing is because, you know, there are passions of the author in that story. And sometimes they're, you know, things that happen to them and sometimes they're just observations or just interests or whatever, but yeah. So no, I mean, I think it's really cool. And, you know, the idea of a horror, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or Girl Interrupted, that's not something I've seen. I don't think, like, I can't really think of anything that, so this sort of feels like, yeah, no, this is super fresh and super, you know, worthwhile that you wrote this. This is a great, great niche you filled. You found like a hole too. It just so happened to be all your interests.
Well, I wish it was just from the pure, like, creative, you know, sitting down at my computer or my notebook thinking, oh, what kind of original idea could I come up with? But it actually came from a nightmare. And, you know, I've always heard, you know, write what you can't stop thinking about. Oh, and this nightmare was just, I just woke up like, what the fuck was that? And I remember telling my husband about it. And he just looked at me and he goes, that needs to be a story. And I'm just like, all right, yep, it's a story.
Done. Signed, sealed, delivered, mister.
Yep.
It's happening. That's great. I mean, isn't that, that's what King says, right? Like all his books were nightmares. I mean, the ones he can remember.
Yeah, right.
So something else I wanted to mention that it just really struck me early on, and you said, you know, you were, you know, you studied writing in college and stuff, you know, grad school and whatever. So like this book is written in a non-traditional tense. And yes. What I mean for that is like, you know, most, you know, we all know first person, second person, third person, right? So first person is me, I, second person is you, you know, that's how the writing would be. And like, nobody writes in second person. And then third person is like the name, right? So you're looking at the as an outside observer. So I would say, oh, Renee does this. Not I, not you, Renee, or Eugene, or Spartacus, whoever. And so you write, you've chosen, you know, third person tends to be the most used. Yeah. First person is lesser, so you've written in first person here, but also the tense is present. So you're writing in first person present tense for this book, which is a choice and hard. I've tried to do it and
it's hard.
It's really like, so what I mean by that is it's, you know, a normal sentence, you know, so most books would be past tense. So you'd say, you know, I sat down and had a sip of my coffee before I started the day. Sat is past tense. And had a sip, like it's all past, all things that have happened. You're retelling the events. I sat down and had a sip of my coffee before I started the day. And the present tense might be something like, I'm sitting down and I reach over and I sip my coffee and think about starting the day or something like that. So it's like happening in that moment. It's not being retold from a previous, you know, time. It's happening in the moment. And yeah, I had to point that out. That is a choice and a half. So what's wrong with you? Why did you do this to yourself?
Well, the first book is in, it's completely in first person present tense because I wanted to put the reader in you would think of second person as putting them in it because you're saying you.
Yeah.
But for me, I thought being first person present tense would do the same thing. And I mean, I wanted them to feel, I think it goes back to my whole thing with mental illness, and people that don't deal with mental illness have no fucking clue what people go through. And I just really wanted to put people in that moment. Like, how would you feel if you woke up in a fucking padded room and you have no idea how you're there and they won't let you fucking leave? And then they start pumping meds through you. And then these people fucking, they have scars all over them. And you find out that the shit that they do to themselves and other people. And then they want you. They want to get into you. And they want to tap into your bones. And how would you feel? This is going on right now. And plus when I write.
Not good.
I'll tell you
right now, I don't feel good about it. This is not my safe place.
And also when I'm writing, I mean, to me, as I'm writing it, it is happening to me right then as I'm creating it, because I'm seeing it as like it's a movie playing in my brain. And when you're watching a movie, it's happening right now. You can't get out of it. It's going on right now. You can't, oh yeah, the other day, this, you're not really there. You're hearing about it after. So someone's telling you this. So it at least ended up good for somebody that's telling the story.
That's true. It's almost like a spoiler. Like, oh, I know somebody lived.
Right. Somebody made it out of this. But yeah, that was, I don't know. It just feels more, I feel like it ups the tension, you know, and it makes people think like I said, like, wow, like this is happening to me right now. Like, holy shit. You know,
anything,
and actually Chisel the Bone is part, it starts in third person present tense and it switches to first person present tense. And when it's coming from outside of my main character, those chapters are in third person.
Oh, true. Past. Like the prologue chapter.
Yeah. Well, okay. But when but on Dory's chapters, it's always first present tense when you're in Dory's head.
Oh, what a decision. That's so interesting. Okay. I didn't notice that the first chapter wasn't that way. And I was just kind of thinking it all had been once I noticed it. That's
so good because I wondered if that would be kind of jarring for people, but I think it's really cool. I haven't really seen people do that, you know?
Right. Well, exactly. It's not really a thing that it's not done. And like I said, like present tense is almost never done. It's so super rare. Anyway, but yeah, to switch between them even probably more so, but no, I mean, I think that there was that chapter that was the letter that was in between and maybe that sort of smoothed it over for me for that one transition.
Actually like a little news article.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. It wasn't a letter. That's right. It was a news article. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. But like that. So for me, I wasn't even aware of it. I was not jarred. I mean, the bone chiseling was jarring.
Well, yeah, that should be jarring. Be awake at visceral. Night.
Yeah. No, that's that was pretty gruesome for sure. Flaying lots of flesh. Lots of flaying going on in that opening jet.
Oh yeah.
And scars that wriggled like serpents. Mm-hmm. Very cool. The scars have all aligned.
All of the scars. We've all got them.
Yeah, we do. And some are more wriggly than others. That's all.
Yes.
very, very awesome. I believe you said you had prepared a reading for us tonight. Is that something you want?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that cool?
I think that would be great. We could get through the reading and I think we'll just swing it around to a little nostalgia before we head out of here and we can call it a brig and I can let you out and you can go be free and, you know, try to record music again. hopefully things don't break one after the other.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Technical difficulties. Suck.
So yeah, whenever you're ready is fine. I'll mute myself. What are you going to be reading for us?
I was going to read, wait a minute. I'm screwing up my screen here trying to pull it up.
I got you screwed up screen right here.
I was just going to read from Chisel, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. Are you going to start at the beginning or are you going
to? Yeah, I figured I'd start right from the beginning.
All right. Yeah. Just give everybody trauma right
now. Yeah. You've already teased about that prologue, so I might as well just read it, right?
I mean, I don't see any reason why not. So, whenever you're ready.
All right. This is Chisel the Bone, and this is the prologue. The Carver, the Collector, and the Stitcher. Oh, wait a minute. I got to put on my reading glasses, damn it. All right. Now I'm ready.
Sorry. Reading glasses are metal as fuck.
All right. The Carver, the Collector, and the Stitcher. The cloth, secured in his mouth, knotted tight behind his head, prevents him from screaming. A blindfold stretches across his eyes. The white hot sting of the blade slicing through the skin of his shin makes him grit his teeth. Only a whimper escapes. Buckknife in hand, the Carver gets down to the bone quickly. Two serpent-like scars run up the outside of both of the Carver's forearms. They writhe and pulse as he uses the edge of the blade to shave and peel the flesh away from the outer layer of dense, compact bone. After uncovering a large area, he reaches out and swaps the knife for a chisel and mallet. Like a modern-day Michelangelo, he begins whittling away at the victim's tibia, the bigger of the two shin bones, careful not to go too deep. Serpent scars slither around while he works. Every hit of the mallet sends a shaking jolt through the restrained man. The chair legs rattle against the tiled floor with every jostle. Ankles zip-tied to the wooden chair legs, wrists zip-tied to each side of the back of the chair. Tears soak the blindfold and leak down his cheeks from underneath. Snot bubbles at his nostrils. Strands of his shaggy brown hair stick to his sweaty forehead. Rather than creating a work of art, The carver extracts bone shavings. With the help of the collector, who stands beside him, curls of shaved bone pile up on a sheet of tinfoil. These ribbons of victory will get dried and crushed to dust at a later time. From behind the carver, someone with gnarly scarred knuckles passes the collector a second sheet of tinfoil. They swap the filled foil for the empty. The carver reaches for a new tool. A small utility knife takes the place of the chisel and mallet. Rapid shaving motions slide down the tibia over and over and over again. More whimpering, more chair rattling. Sibling serpents shake and slither along with every movement of the carver's arms. Little bits of bone pile up on the tinfoil this time. This second batch is for immediate consumption. Mixed with blood, the pile of bone fragments looks similar to sticky black tar heroin. Bone cutters call it dark heaven, or red sugar, or simply dust. Deal done, the stitcher steps out of the shadows, thread and needle held in grotesquely scarred hands, to seal the wound. The victim no longer whimpers. The victim no longer cries. The victim passed out moments ago, head hung low, chin to chest. Whether from shock or blood loss is of no concern to the carver, the collector, and the stitcher. They're only here for the dust and the high that will come with it, as well as the money they'll make off what they don't smoke, snort, or ingest themselves. The stitcher feels thankful. Not just for the high to come and the money they'll make. It sure is easier to stitch the wound without all that shaking and blubbering from a few moments ago. The needle and thread zips back and forth through the flesh as smoothly as a whisper floating with the wind. Wound now sealed shut, it's time to clear the scene. With two tips of the chair by the collector and the stitcher, the carver carefully slides out the blood-covered plastic tarp spread out underneath the victim and the chair. He rolls it up, preps it for disposal. The zip ties then get snipped from the victim's wrists and ankles and tucked securely into the tarp. Add in a few rocks from the park on the walk back to their den, and these bone cutters will send all remnants of this event downriver. All except the product and the buck knife. The handle of the knife gets wiped clean, hilt placed in the victim's hands, with his fingers wrapped around it, assures only his prints appear on the weapon. The carver, the collector, and the stitcher cover their tracks well. Maybe not the tracks in their skin or the scars that double as their own living entities, those they wear with pride, like badges of honor. But definitely the tracks from the assaults against all their unwilling victims. Not all victims are unwilling. Some enjoy the rush of the slice like a bite from a vampire. The donors, minions or lackeys is what non-dust users call them. Some might even call them Renfields. Mini bone cutters, aka dusters, also get a rush from the slice. And it sure does wear you down after a while. All that blood loss, all that pain. Much more satisfaction and stimulation comes from inflicting that pain on another. But when times get desperate, they will again slice into themselves. Seen all clean and sparkling as though only the victim has been present, the three junkie cutters vacate the premises. The tarp gets rolled up tight and worn like a backpack by the collector. After one last wipe of the outside doorknob, the three practically skip down the hallway and out onto the sidewalk, as giddy as children approaching an ice cream truck. While strolling away from the scene of the crime, as though nothing unusual has taken place, they hear the flapping of large wings overhead. The sound moves swiftly toward the house they just left behind. They all look up, wondering if they'll see what they assume has risen. A glimpse of huge black wings zooming past the beam shining from the streetlight confirms their assumption. Brookhaven Daily News, grave robberies occurring across the state. State police report that numerous cemeteries throughout the state are experiencing gravesite desecration and exhumation. Not only have the caskets of the dead been robbed of all valuables contained within, but something else of import that has gone missing are the actual remains of the dead. The bones of over 275 interred bodies across 13 counties in the state have gone missing. Most recently, Howard Cemetery, near Crystal Lake, in Razorville, was hit by grave robbers just last night. There is suspicion that these incidents may be the result of parties going on in the late night hours, since drug paraphernalia was discovered at almost every crime scene. Police are asking that if you or anyone you know witnessed any questionable activity in or around cemeteries, especially after dark, or if anyone has any information that can lead police to the violators, please call the State Police Tip Line at 1-800-555-7686. Chapter 1. At Home Dory. My eyes snap wide open from a dead sleep. I fling the covers off and bolt upright in bed. Covered in sweat from a recurring nightmare, I desperately try to catch my breath. Voices of all my previous therapists ricochet around in my head. Don't forget to breathe. Calm the mind, calm the body. Remembering their training, I try deep breathing. Breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for 7, release for 8. It doesn't take long. Rapid shallow breathing takes over the 4-7-8 relaxing breath technique. A splash of cold water on my face will help snap me out of this. As soon as my feet hit the floor, a scraping sounds out against my window. I freeze. With the curtains closed, I'm unable to see if it's just a bird on the sill. But my curtains always remain closed, especially at night. City life doesn't offer much privacy. One must create it themselves. Scraping sounds again. I flinch, then ease myself out of bed. Slowly and quietly, I move toward the sound. At the window, I reach for the edge of the curtain and pull it open just enough to peek out. Nothing on the sill. I lean close to the glass, so close to the glass I feel the coolness of the October night on the tip of my nose. Streetlights illuminate the dark outside. A disturbing amount of artificial light fills the city sky, masking the glow of the full moon. Nothing appears down in the driveway that could have made the sound. Nothing from the apartment building next door. Suddenly, a large shadow at the mouth of the driveway grabs my attention. It moves in waves, like the flapping of a huge bird, past the lamppost at the front of my building. Then it swoops down the length of the driveway. I crank my neck to look up and get a better view. A loud crash makes me jump. I drop the curtain close, a safety reflex. Then I realize that sound came from within my apartment. It's almost 3 a.m. What the fuck could that be? I rush for the baseball bat by my door. Then remember I'd already broken it when I flipped out on Jill's last flyby fuck, trashing the apartment in the process. Not my finest seeing red moment. I grab the collapsed hi-hat stand next to my bureau and stumble, half awake, into the kitchen. Jill's half-bare ass stares me in the face as she's bent over in her itty-bitty boy shorts undies, picking up the stainless steel bowl she must have dropped on the floor. Why does this bitch run around half-naked all the time? Hey there, Miss Paranoid! What's with the symbol stand raised up over your head? Are you sleepwalking? Newsflash! That's not your hairbrush! Jill laughs at her own bad joke as she straightens up. She places the bowl on the counter and steps back over to the stove where she's frying up some plantains and eggs. What's with such an early breakfast? My bartending shifts are wearing me thin. No time for dinner between the office and the bar. I need some fuel. What gives? Still no raise at your day gig, huh? A loud, sarcastic laugh bursts out of Jill. Yeah, I'm not counting on that to happen at my testosterone-filled workplace. She huffs as she adds, I really need a new job. I've got a fucking master's degree, and I still need to work 2 jobs to pay rent and my student loans. And if this full-of-itself city keeps hiking up the rent, she slams another pan on the stove. Well, then I guess I'll have to switch to stripping in the evening rather than tending bar. She sways her hips side to side as she stirs a pan of beans and rice. 3 hip sways later, she grabs the newspaper off the counter and tosses it at me. What's this for? It's too damn early to read. Ditching the hi-hat stand, I replace it with a cup of coffee, black and bitter, and sit at the table. I don't bother asking why she brewed coffee at this hour. I assume it's to put in the fridge for iced coffee. Whatever. Works for me. Check out that section I left folded open. You'll never guess what's going on across the state. Makes me think of those psycho dusters that were after you in the nut house. Back to stirring the grub she's cooking up, she laughs. Can you believe there's actually a Razorville, Maine? What? My voice hits a high note I never thought possible this early in the morning. Cut it out. No, there is not. No joke. There is a Razorville. It's in the article. And it gets better. Gulping my coffee, soaking in the warmth of the hot steam drifting across my face, I wait for this better part, as she dramatically waits an extra couple beats to deliver it. She grabs some dishes out of the cupboard, utensils out of the drawer, stirs the grub a bit more before finally turning to face me. There's also a Crystal Lake in Razorville. She's staring right at me, awaiting my reaction. Yeah, now I know you're full of shit. Nice try. Laughter bursts out of me this time. That's what I thought, too. I had to Google it to believe it. Turns out Razorville is actually a village, not a town, but it is real. Oh, and Crystal Lake is actually called Crystal Pond today, but of course, Crystal Lake in a town called Razorville grabs more attention for the article. It all sounds like a fucking horror movie to me, I huff. I wish that's all it was. Waking up sweat-drenched from nightmares on a regular basis? That shit can fuck right off. The article stares up at me, begging me to read, but I'm just too tired. Dealing with potential duster news at this time of day makes my skin crawl, considering it. This is no movie. It's my real life, for fuck's sake. I slide the paper aside. Is that why you're up so early again? Another nightmare? Jill twists around, sits the coffee carafe on the table, and throws me an inquiring look. I nod. Were you back in the psych hospital again? Or was it one of the other ones this time? Hospital. And unlike real life, I didn't get away. I woke up just as Git Girl and Toodles, both jonesing for a high and literally drooling like rabid beasts, were getting ready to slice me open, chisel my bones. Shivers run through me. Shake it off. But I'm fine. It's over. So great to hear you can just brush it off so easily, like a seasoned pro. She flashes her wise-ass smirk. You know what they say, practice and all that jazz. I throw the smirk right back at her. Jill hands me a bowl of black beans and rice and fried plantains, topped with a fried egg. Hope you're hungry. The way I woke up, I hadn't thought about food, but it all looks and smells tasty. I pop the yolk and watch the yellow fluid bleed out all over the darkness underneath. What's up with the eggs? I thought you were a vegan. I am a vegan, silly, she says as she sets down a half-filled bowl for herself and pulls up a chair across the table from me. But sometimes I crave an occasional aborted chick. What, are you the vegan police? She reaches her hands across the table toward me. Cuff me and take me in, officer, but don't even think about getting frisky. Giggling, she flips her long blonde hair over her shoulder and stuffs half an egg into her mouth. Dead baby chick tastes splendid on this beautiful ink-black morning. She licks her lips seductively. You really are one sick bitch, you know that, right? I sure do, sweet and chipper Dory. Would you have me any other way? Her breathy tone sounds way too porn perfect. Not at all. If you were normal, I wouldn't have had a place to live after getting released from that cray-cray joint. As I'm forking the beans and rice around my dish and glancing at the page beside my coffee, I drag up the thank you that I still haven't said to her since she took me back as a roommate last weekend, after Dr. Hedstrom released me. For your safety, is what he'd told me. Ha! How's that for you? This suicidal chick the professionals had labeled delusional is safer in the big bad world than in the psychiatric hospital. Says a lot about those so-called therapeutic institutions, don't you think? Maybe the big doc ought to consider calling the police to investigate those dusters who've taken control of the hospital's NA group before they chase down and torment a patient who actually may need real psychiatric help. Yeah, that'll take too much work, though.
That's all. For now.
Yeah, thank you. Awesome job.
Thanks.
That's great. You know, hearing you read it, you know, I was sort of it was a couple of moments that I'm like, this is so lyrical. And I think you just kind of can't help yourself, you know, and I'm wondering if it was just unintentional or not. But there's specifically from the prologue, there's this point where you say the victim no longer whimpers. The victim no longer cries. The victim passed out moments ago, head hung low, chin to chest. Like I was almost expecting that to rhyme.
well, I like to kind of ruin people's expectations.
That's, I mean, that whole passage though is so unexpected because it's so lyrical and it's really cool. There's a couple moments like that, and also just the way that you repeat the phrase, the carver, the collector, and the stitcher. You know, that's another lyrical thing. It's a poetry thing, a poetic thing. You know, you're reinforcing this language, this phrase, and making it a motif almost. And of course, that's the name of the prologue, the carver, the collector, and the stitcher. I like that. It's a lot of imagery in that just that phrase, you know.
And I liked a lot of those like hard sounds, the carver, the collector, and this, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. and like the victim, you know, it's just, yeah, it's very, sound. It's all about the sound.
Yeah. I talk about it a lot. And I certainly always strive for it. I always say the music in the writing, you know, there's, even if it's not lyrical, you know, there should be a music to, even prose. You know, you don't want to have the same number of syllables too many times in a row.
Right.
You it just needs to have a music to it. Even if you're the only one that's hearing it, you know, somebody else doesn't need to hear it, but if you hear it and you know it's there and you hear the song as you're going, I think you're able to know it's okay. Some confidence here. This is decent. Sounds nice. But for me, that's a big thing. Like I love, you know, it's not just what you're saying, but it's how you're saying it.
Yes.
And I always love that music when it's there.
Well, I mean, it's just like with talking, like I say it to people all the time. It's not like just what you say, but how you say things can just give it it can just give a whole different feel for what you're saying. I mean, it could completely change the meaning with how you say something.
Fried egg, aborted chick fetus.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Well,
you know,
yeah. Well, Chisel the Bone, it'll be out on July 23rd from Encyclopocalypse Publications. Renee, thank you so much for reading that and for coming on to talk about this and all your stuff.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been fun for sure. Before we go, though, I do love to turn things around back to nostalgia, which is, of course, Retro Redoctopus's bread and butter trade and tribulation. I don't know. I screwed that up. I was trying to like, you know, come up with an idea of some sort of a combination of horror and music and stuff. And, you know, we were talking earlier and you are actually a big Rob Zombie fan.
Yeah.
And, you love his movies.
Rob Zombie, Devil's Rejects.
There you go. She's wearing a shirt, folks. Gonna have to take my word for it. I think it's funny that, you know, he doesn't work as much like rock into his movies as I would think, like as know, like they're not like heavy metal horror movies, you know. He just makes horror.
Yeah.
He makes a lot of pastiches. I think that's really what he's very interested in. Talk about why do you love Rob Zombie movies so much.
Why do I love Rob Zombie
movies? Like, why are they what do you love about him?
I love that he's not like he's not scared. You know, I don't know. It's kind of different. I'm trying to grasp on why. I think it's his characters. Yeah. His characters, man, they're fucked up, you know? And they're so individual. Like, they're all different and fucked up in their own way. Like, I don't know. And I like that he can be so brutal, but there's a point or something being said to the brutality that he showcases. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if everybody looks at it that way, or maybe that's just me, like, psychoanalyzing it, you know? But, like, a lot of people think of Rob Zombie movies as just like, oh, it's just so brutal and gory, and all the characters are fucked up, and why is his wife in it again? But, I don't know. I think if you can look past just the fact that he likes to be brutal and gory, he's really making statements with that too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, my favorite thing about his stuff is the pastiche angle, as I mentioned, and you know, he is evoking brutality of the films that he's, you know, he's mimicking or he's trying to pay homage to. There's a lot of really messed up 70s horror.
Yes.
That yes. he loves. And mm-hmm. a lot of it's Italian.
And I love 70s horror too. So,
so maybe that's like 70s thing. Italian horror?
Well, yeah.
Big Fulci fan, maybe, or you know, the zombie versus shark movie.
Oh yeah.
Lucio Fulci's.
I like crazy. I like all kinds of fucking horror. I mean, I like stupid B horror. I like slasher horror. I like, you know, psychological shit, serial killer shit, or monster shit. I like all kinds of different horror.
So, are you one of those that like you could watch only horror movies to the end of time and be fine, or do you like to mix it up with a little Love Actually every once in a while?
No, no. My movie collection is horror and comedy. Nice. So I'm just tragic. It's all about the tragedy.
I'm really picky and really protective of my comedy legends. Who are your big comedy favorites for like directors or just actors that you go back to?
I like ridiculous humor. I fucking love Will Ferrell.
I knew you were going to say that.
How did you know?
I knew it was going there. I mean, I love Will Ferrell a lot.
He's not right, and I love him. He's so not right in the head. But that's what makes him great.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he's not it, but I mean, he comes to mind immediately. Yeah.
What about like Mel Brooks? You Mel Brooks fan by chance?
Tell me movies. I know.
So like Young Frankenstein. Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, The Producers.
Okay. But not like huge up there.
Fair enough. I mean it's all subjective, but yeah. I mean, I'm much the same way. Most of my collection is either horror or comedy. I have like a very, very specific curated comedy shelf on my DVD rack, but it's mostly horror. And like, then there's like the like adventure stuff and like monster, like King Kong stuff. It's not really horror, but
yeah,
like Ray Harryhausen, you know, like the Clash of the Titans guy. I love all that old stuff and whatever. But yeah, it's 90% horror. It's just I don't know. There's something about it. I don't know. It's just fun for me. It's always been fun.
Same with me.
And like that imagery, like the same heavy metal imagery, like basically every Ronnie James Dio cover, Black Sabbath, you know, like they're all just so creepy and or like Merciful Fate too, like so many bands really. I mean, even Iron Maiden's got a freaking zombie as their mask.
I know. They just go hand in hand. Like when I started like meeting people in the horror writing community, like I was like so blown away. I still am about how many metal fans there are, and I'm like, this is freaking sweet. This is where I belong, right here.
Yeah. Yeah. do you know sidebar, do you know Overkill? Do you like Overkill?
I don't listen to Overkill, but I know them. Yeah.
Oh, I love Overkill. They're another one that had some cool covers too, that have like a lot of narrative thrown into those covers. Just like some of them, like Under the Influence is like this kid, like just, I don't know. He's like emerging in like a sewer. And then there's like a giant like skull with bat wings that's shooting laser beams.
Nice!
Like, just he's just down there. He's just doing this. I don't know why, but he's just down there. And then the kid's just like, he's like, he pops out of the sewer as you do, as you're just like hunting for gray water. I don't know what you're doing down there. Sewer clowns, hunting for sewer clowns, maybe, perhaps.
But, yeah, I love songs that are narratives. Like, it's so funny. I have a 9-year-old son, and he's into metal.
Nice.
And he said, and what he said, I can so relate to it. And it's so funny. He's like, I hate songs about relationships. And it's funny when I look at all the songs I've written for the band. It's like none of them have to do with relationships. They're more like narrative, yeah. You know, and. I think it makes it more interesting.
Yeah. Again, you just remind me of me. Like, that's like how I always wrote, because I wrote all the lyrics for my old bands. And like, it was like my version of before I wrote short stories and novels. Like, I would have a song, I would have an idea.
They're stories.
And I didn't write stories. I wrote songs. I wrote lyrics. And I have this idea. And then, you know, I've gone back and turned some of those into stories.
Yes. Like
later.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because I wrote a song that goes with my novel, and it's called Chisel the Bone.
Nice.
And it comes from the point of view of the bad guys, the bone cutters.
Of course.
And I also wrote a song for, I had a story in that Try Not to Die. Deathfest Confessions.
Oh yeah, okay.
And I wrote a song for that called it's funny because you were saying a lot of flaying the flesh going on and Chisel the Bone, and that's the name of the song, is Flay the Flesh.
So I thought that was same wavelength, Renee.
Yeah. So I do that a lot. Like, I actually one. I did a big project on that in grad school too, with studying sympathetic villains. And I did a presentation on sympathetic villains and how they appear in books, movies, and music. And my band at the time, back then, back in 2013, Weapons at Hand, we went in the studio and wrote a handful of songs. I wrote a handful of lyrics for the songs they wrote for, and they were stories about sympathetic villains.
Nice.
Yeah. So nice, yeah, songs are just stories. I mean, think of Bob Dylan. I mean, come on. It's, you know, think of like,
I know, that's what everybody gives him. Everybody's like, yeah, no, he couldn't sing, but who cares?
He's a storyteller and a poet. He's a
storyteller.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's fun as hell. I can't wait to hear this band. I think we're gonna love you guys.
Yeah, I hope so.
On numerous levels. Again, thank you so much for coming on. Before we get out of here, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you online and where you would like them to go to pre-buy your brand new one, Chisel the Bone.
You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm not calling it the other name. And it's just under my name, Reneas DeCamillis. So I'm on all them. I'm not on TikTok or any of that. I can't keep up with just those three. So yeah, I'm there. And where to pre-order Chisel? I believe you can do it. You can pre-order it at, of course, Amazon. You can also pre-order it through my publisher, Encyclopocalypse Publications. And also, I just wanted to add that anyone who wants to know the full story and get the bone cutters to read before they read the sequel, you can order that straight through my publisher and get the free ebook along with a paperback purchase.
Excellent. And folks, definitely try to do that. I know Amazon is easier. It's always the easiest thing to do. It's always the first thing we think of. And that's a problem. I always try to ask people, you know, if you can look up the publisher, order direct from the publisher, that is always the best thing you can possibly do.
And you'll save money.
I will have a show in the show notes. If you look down, I will include links to the publisher, not Amazon, although you can go there if that's what you want. The important
nobody
thing
needs
is
a link
to
that. They know how to get there.
What's that?
I said nobody needs a link to Amazon. They know how to get there.
Yeah, they don't need that. Encyclopocalypse has a lot of P's though, so we want to make sure they spell it right. So before we go, I'm going to hit this little button here and let you out of the brig. I hope you are not too slimy. I know it was semi-slimy today. We had a slime storm last week, and I haven't gotten a chance to clean it. And I mean, I know it's weird. You're like, how do you have a slime storm, Steve? And I'm like, well, it normally doesn't happen. It's just, you know, certain weeks there are more portals to other dimensions than other weeks. You know, and sometimes the dimensions that they open up to are full of nothing but green slime. And it just happens. It's just one of those things. It's one of those weird things you got to roll with. So I hope
you I don't mind the slime. It makes my hair look good, all slick back. I look like a rock greaser.
On. Rock on. Can we get one of these before we go? And I'm going to use this as a screen grab. All right. Thank you so much, Renee. And we'll catch you on the flip side. I will take us out of here. Guys, thank you so much for listening. That wraps up the episode. If you haven't jumped ship by now, we certainly hope you've enjoyed this week's bonus journey over the treacherous waters of all the things that made growing up awesome. If you like what you've heard, please hit that little subscribe button and like us on Facebook and I won't say Twitter either. As well, oh shit. Oh, well. I'm just going to power through. As well as being part of the InebriArt Podcast Network, Retro Reductibus is a full-fledged member of the Dorkening Podcast Network, so if you get a chance, please check out our sister shows like Epic Tales from the Sewers with our very own Justin Cooper, Throwdown Thursday with Patsy and Ashes, Let's Not with Michelle and Sam, Bear at Night, Nerds of Unusual Origin, Talking Game and Tech, lots of good stuff, and all the folks from the Owl Light Network are now on the network as well, so that's really fun. Love those guys. They're putting out more shows than I can count. I don't have enough fingers. I don't know how to count higher than 10, but it's a lot. For more information or to subscribe to us or any of these great shows, please visit thedorkening.com and be sure to check out our killer sponsor, Deadly Grounds Coffee, coffee to die for. I have been your host. My name is Parasite Steve, and it is indeed a sad thing. Your adventures have ended here. Good night.
For more shows like the one you just heard, check out the Dorkening Podcast Network at thedorkening.com.